This is the Poet and the Poem from the Library of Congress. I'm with Majda Gama. She's our guest, and she is a rising star whose chapbook just won a national award. And here's Majda with a poem.
Morning, good afternoon. Thank you for having me, Grace. This is from my chapbook, The Call of Paradise, and it's called Minarets, Beirut, Early 21st Century. On the Christian side of town, there is no adhan. We speak like the tiles on a minaret during prayer call, like the sympathy of strings in my grandmother's oud that she put down to bear children. In Beirut, I last saw her alive. She ate nothing and spoke of Byblos in the 60s when she saw Fayrouz sing in the ruins of the Roman amphitheater. She wants to hear how I live my life in Amrika and am I Mabsuta. In the pastel light, the hours pass over our tongues like sugared almonds.
Majda Gama, I loved her the minute I saw her. She was born in Beirut. She had a Saudi father and an American mother, raised in Saudi Arabia and the United States. She lived and studied in Egypt and England. So as I told you, she had a chapbook, The Call of Paradise, which was the winner of the 2022 Two Sylvias Chapbook Award. So we know that you have this great span of experience. How do you think your poetry shows that imagistically where you have lived and felt and tasted and seen? How does that show up?
It's definitely a record of that life experience. In a way, it's almost like ethnographic. I almost feel called now because so much time has passed in my life now, and the countries that I'm from have changed so drastically that I feel almost like a calling to capture those changes. For instance, in that poem, it was really important for me to mention that my grandmother's life, that she, her memories of Beirut pre-Civil War. So the every line, pretty much in every poem I write about in the Middle East, is reflective of really great change and turmoil and migration in my family's life and in the lives of the people I know.
And made permanent, beautifully so. Why do you think you won the award? What did Diane Sue say about you that made you think she liked it so much?
Do you want to hear the blurb?
Yeah, give us a bit of it anyway.
From Diane Sue. She wrote this immediately when I found out that I was the winner. She didn't sit on the blurb. She sent it to Sylvia's and they sent it to me. The speaker of Majda Gama's The Call of Paradise is a bride of many cities, daughtered by the East and mothered by the West.
Mm.
The result of this fluid positionality is nuanced, hushed witness, oud-scented ritual, and deep artfulness.
That's good enough for me. I'll take it. How wonderful. And, you know, it's so unlike her own poetry. I always suspected that a judge just chose what they liked that was like themselves, but this was not at all. So let's hear two poems from this chapbook, and we'll make up our own minds. Majda Gama, I'm Grace Cavalieri. We're on remote.
This is a poem that's in the form of a ghazal, and it's called East West. It just is in the winter issue of Plowshares as well. So I carry the East with me. I carry it to the West. Wrap it in layers in a small suitcase tagged for the West. In America, there is a romance that calls for leaving known people and places to head for the West. I open my suitcase and stare at shoes that leak sand. Oh, I mourn not having red sand dunes to walk in the West. In the 1980s, I inhaled California through sun-in and suntans, wanted woods that were red, the west coast of hippie squats and beat cities, the punk bands Penelope Spheris filmed in The Decline of Western Civilization, Part One. Yes to Crime, Exene, Darby Crash, Alice Bag, The Roxy, The Mask, "The West is the best," sang Jim Morrison to me in my Eastern bed via Walkman. I believed in his highways that led west. Days of light cycle into nights of light. I saw LA and felt wed. Bride of many cities, daughtered by the East, mothered by the West.
Before you continue, tell everyone what a ghazal is, although I'm not saying it right.
So a ghazal is a form that dates back to very early 7th, 6th century Arabia. And it has variations across the Muslim world, even into Andalusian Spain. Lorca wrote in the form. And it has a beautiful history. It's still sung in parts of Asia. But for English, ghazals in English, the thing to know is that each couplet should be a standalone sort of jewel that you string along into a necklace. And there's repetition of end words. And in the final stanza, final couplet, the poet drops their name or an allusion to their name or a metaphor. So I broke the form a little bit.
You didn't put Majda.
I put an allusion to my name, which is in Arabic means full of light or illuminated.
Mm-hmm.
So
that was pretty sneaky, actually. Let's hear another.
Yes. Oh, I have one about this is ablution, which is about the term for washing up for prayer that we do in Islam. Ablution. In American August, the lake repels my body, green and opaque. Unlike the petroleum compound's hidden pools that as a local, I am forbidden from entering. I know they are clearest Feiruz, and not from the tin pipes of the ablution water I wash my wrists and ankles in. At a public trough in the schoolyard, multiple taps open, wailing in the rush of release, to a row of girls gowned in dark emerald. I await the summer shoreline in America every year, only to stand on the edge, unable to submerge myself.
Yes, you do some very deft things. Only a very sophisticated writer does this. One of them is the way you fold exposition into the poem so surprisingly. And I think of the poem where your mother goes on a vacation and leaves the twins behind. Then the speaker speaks up as one of the twins using the I, which is very surprising and never declarative, never objective. So that's one thing you do, which not many people do. And another is, I think your language is so silky and like a singer. It's like a singer. And I think it's because you were raised in another language. I believe that causes a lilt to your words that we're not able to quite do, those of who speak our native language. Do you believe that the orientation you had adds some musicality?
I do. I do think that my ear was developed a little differently. That's absolutely true. I am a citizen of Saudi Arabia. And when I was growing up there, I was in the Saudi school system, immersed in the Arabic language for the first 6 years of my life. And a lot of that required about 50% of the curriculum was Islamic studies. So I spent a lot of time memorizing and chanting Quran. And it trained my ear in a different way. I grew up, of course, this was a very normal experience for my circle over there in Saudi Arabia. But this is really funny. I didn't really quite realize that I did that until a friend of mine, a Saudi American fiction writer, Iman Gota, was trying to translate one of my poems in English into Arabic for a magazine in Oman. And she said that I made it easy because it's like they're already multilingual. So I'm really listening or writing on two levels, I guess. It's unconscious, but I like that you picked up on that. I guess it's a natural thing.
I love the thought that you're in a school where you chanted. What must that have done to your soul? What must have done to just your being to chant? How many times a day did you chant?
Oh, it was often. It was at least once a day.
Oh.
The school day would start off. They would round us up, all of these girls in our very weather inappropriate dark green gowns. And we would do like morning exercises and then read from the Quran and sing the national anthem of Saudi Arabia. And I remember one year I was so good at this chanting that I was picked to go up on stage and read from the Quran. And I was extremely proud. I must have been like 9 years old. And my father was really proud of me too.
I knew you were the chief chanter the minute I met you. I said, that girl is the chief chanter. She was. When did you land in America and what was it like?
So it's a really convoluted story, but my father was the Saudi liaison to the United States Geological Survey from 1974 to 1979. And so we were put up in Northern Virginia in a little town called Reston, which is a planned community, and was just very much a little microcosm.
What year was that? Because I remember when Reston was created, about 68.
Yeah, so we came here about 74. And I was about, my twin and I, we were toddlers. And we went to nursery school and first grade. And we began our education in the English language while living in this multicultural household. My father would entertain his Saudi friends who were all very young. And many were still studying or just, you know, starting jobs, you know, in the embassy downtown. And they would come to our apartment in Reston, and we would sit on the floor, as you do in Saudi, and eat rice. And then I would go play with the Jewish kids upstairs and spin dreidels. You know, it was like that. So
I was
fortunate.
Is it the best of all backgrounds?
It felt that way before 9/11. It definitely did not feel that way after 9/11. That created a big, I think, schism in my family's experience, and it ultimately turned me towards writing less for myself and towards writing for understanding and for publication.
Understood. Let's have two more poems.
From the chapbook or from this anthology?
Well, let's do two more from your chapbook, and we will definitely get to the anthology for sure.
Well, let me read the poem that you referenced about my parents going off to have fun.
Your blonde mother.
Yes. Fertility rights. In the El Ain oasis, we ride across ancient acres of palms on a white golf cart fitted with mini fans for the days that scorch the body 9 months out of the year. My mother rides a seat ahead of me. Yellow blonde hair floats across her lips as she turns to talk about a visit to the Loire Valley in 1982. That was the best trip of her life. She'd left her 10-year-old twins in Arizona with her mother. I don't mind my parents visiting castles without my sister and me, or that they undoubtedly ate brie and chocolate mousse with adult abandon. My mother wore her hair up then in a knot and clipped gifted gold to her earlobes. My father traveled with little bars of bergamot soap in his luggage and jars of sandalwood to scent his way. We buried him nowhere near palm trees in the red backhoed dirt of Virginia, a land none of us are from. Must I go there? I am here. In an oasis, thousands of years old, beneficent palms rise above us as we drive by, their bodies crafted into towers over seasons by the careful excision of fronds. fronds used in every part of life for shade and shelter, for tools. Then the females are hand pollinated in a fertility rite still practiced by the farmers. I wish to know what the men whisper to the date trees and how to move between these bodies with hands of pollen. Moon identity. It wasn't the moon, but my family let me believe for at least a few minutes as we drove on the Sheikh Zayed Highway that the globe rising before us, ripe on the horizon, was the sister to our sun. And why not? It was the color of a rinsed photograph, the type that bears the tarnish of time. And the feeling was there of breath loss, for it loomed so close over the highway. We were driving somewhere along the open road of a young city, past the biggest fountain, along the cranes laying the foundation for the tallest building towards something new. And aren't objects in motion their own kind of moon? I don't care that it was a balloon, a funfair ride, stationed above the old Dubai Creek, where the dhows have since ceased carrying their sacks of spices. What I mistook for a moon, she was rising over a rising city, and we were driving somewhere.
Was the feeling was there of breath loss? Of breath loss? Of breath loss? I would have given you the award just for that one word. That is incredible. That is fabulous.
Thank you.
I liked it as well. Now, you are also in an anthology, and that is a big one, too. Tell us about that. That was Lauren Camp, right? What is her name?
Lauren Camp is in it, but this is...
Wasn't she one of the editors?
Zaina Hashembeck.
Oh, that's okay.
And Hala Elian. Mm-hmm. Are the editors.
It's about 300 pages or something. What is
it? It's massive.
How many people are in it?
Oh, yeah, over 100.
Oh,
over 100 people.
Fabulous.
And it was an interesting project. It's the title is We Call to the Eye and the Night, Love Poems by Writers of Arab Heritage. So
let's have your poem that's in there. Are you in there more than once?
I have three poems in here, but I can read a ghazal from here. We don't have to read.
That would be great.
Okay, thanks. This is called The World for a Minute. The sun warmed the brick beneath my toes, so I perched there and watched a turquoise dragonfly eat from a wand of speedwell for a minute, maybe more. Time slowed, and thoughts of being outdoors while young sprung up, like when I was given a sugar egg for Easter and loved it for a minute, gazed into its otherworldly porthole framed in pastel, some spring paradise within, then ate it, sweet bite after sweet bite. It ached my soul and stomach for a minute to do so. My twin kept hers for weeks to look into and travel through, as if she had an edible kaleidoscope. I felt shame for consuming such beauty in less than a minute. But other sweets endured, like when outdoors and reading beneath a tree all summer, the sunlight through leaves was its own canopy of saffron sweetness. It's no minute pleasure to have time turn slowly, like the spinning of sugar into solid form. And days do this, stretch out long, like the rolled page of phyllo dough, the minute before it's formed into layers of baklava. See, more sweetness. Yet Western types tell me, time is short. I've known since childhood that satisfaction is strung minute by minute. And crushed hard that book-long summer for the bands I watched on MTV. I traveled far from our summer rental, watching bands sing songs that lasted mere minutes. Daryl Hall, Crush, sang about women, man eaters, dream come true makers, bitch girls, and looked privately into my eyes to tell me all summer she or I did it in a minute. And the summer was timed by minutes, 20 minutes until camp, 15 minutes left to play, 10 to read before lights out, making time stop by writing about Daryl here in this minute.
Well, first I want to know about your relationship to music, but that is what I mean. When I said in the beginning that your background gave you imagery like no other, it's there, it's all there. And then the cardamom and the rose water, you know, your imagery is inimitable. No one else could borrow it, except maybe your twin sister. So that is a plus for sure. And I knew that you were involved in the music world somehow. So that surely was a splash in the face of American culture. I mean, you're going full frontal nudity into American music, if that's the way you would define our culture. What is it with you and the music?
It was a lot like, yeah, full frontal nudity. That's a good way to put it. I think some of it had to do with the fact that I was living in two countries at the same time for maybe the first 20 years of my life. And music was banned in Saudi Arabia. So it was something that it was contraband. I would smuggle it back into the kingdom and spent a lot of time obsessing over the music that I loved on MTV.
What kind of music was that?
It was the 80s. It was new wave and punk. Yeah. New wave and punk. And I still have all these 7-inches. So as much as I was a young girl memorizing Quran and living in the city of Jeddah, my hometown, we were very isolated from the West. So I allude to that in the poem East West. You would bring your Eastern life into the West by a suitcase carrying dates or prayer rugs or whatever, and then do it in reverse. And that was, you know, my life, and it still feels like a natural rhythm to me.
Did it feel that when you were in one place, you missed the other?
I mean, I did constantly. I joke that I had culture shock that never went away.
But it's like being homesick for something always. Always be homesick for the other, which I think is a kind of a beautiful melancholy to live with.
It is its own duende, I think. Yeah, absolutely. It's people say that I have nostalgia, but I'm really just trying to stop time and make sense of this sort of strange adventure. And I'm really lucky that I have like a cohort of friends I grew up with, many of whom are writers who have American moms and Saudi dads.
Oh, yeah. Writers are the best. I mean, that is like consciousness. If you just hang with your writers, you will be whole because they have all the puzzle pieces that fit. And that's the tribe.
You know, it is a tribe.
When I'm out of the tribe, I don't have any energy whatsoever. It's because that's it. That's the hydration. Well, you have a beautiful background and you're making the best of it. And I want to know if there's anything you feel you want to say about the anthology all the more, because it was a huge achievement.
It took a really long time to come together because Zaina and Hala were so thorough. They put out a call, they reached out to people. It's so comprehensive. And I think there's a bit of a cliche about Middle Eastern love poetry, you know, wine and quatrains and rubaiyats. And this is modern, but not in an alienating way. And there are people from all over the Middle East, just all over. And in fact, I'm one of two Saudis in the anthology, and the other Saudi passed away before the anthology came out. So there was a reading, Persia, the publisher, very generously.
That's a great publisher. And I believe they are going to honor you with a publication. Tell us about that.
Well,
it just happens to have won an award. So let's just throw that out there, right there. It has just won a national award. And what is the title of this forthcoming book?
Oh, my forthcoming full length is with Wandering Angus Press.
Oh, I thought that was with Persea too.
Oh, that would be a dream. That would be wonderful.
But that's, maybe it will be heard from our ear to Persea. So you have a full length coming out
next year. A book that I've been working on for about 10 years. I'm a little nervous about it. It's autobiographical. I'm moving away from that now. But as I said, after 9/11, there was just this urge to record such great changes in the world and family and culture and life. And I'm really proud of it, but I'm also really nervous about it. So Wandering Angus, the editors chose it for their book award, and it'll be out next year.
Well, you know, honesty will never hurt you. In a poem, it won't. No matter how bold you feel you're saying something, it's tendered by lyricism. So there's nothing to fear here. And we'll hear about we'll get on air with that one too. Let us have a final Majda Gama poem.
Thank you for having me. This has been an absolute thrill.
I've been looking forward to it because I know your work. And as you said, I did hear you when you were a little girl about 5 years ago.
Well, I've just been looking forward to hanging out with you in general.
Yeah, we should do this off camera.
I agree. I'll end with the final poem in the chapbook, which contains the title of the chapbook. And it's about finding the world of the desert and having it be so changed that it's a bit of a tourist experience. So, Arabian safari in a desert conservation zone. The sun rises before we see the dunes. Then the sun has siblings. Balloons, also red orbs, hang on the horizon. Above and below, we are tourists in this desert and step slowly into cold morning air. And when I say the air is cold, it is cold as a cistern minding its own water. The cold is also like a stone, slowly warming to the touch of us. The air is fresh with smells, like fruit turning or earth unturned. All around us, the urine of timid animals. We are the only humans and came to fly falcons. They sit in their own tent, faces covered in burqas. This is the correct Arabic. I hold up a gloved hand for a gear falcon to land on, watch her blitz feed on meat, then escape her handler for a date palm. She takes 10 minutes of coaxing to fly back to him and is fed more meat. Another falcon is as lazy as a firstborn son. We breakfast on a carpet spread on sand. The shadows of the trees grow alongside us, young trees, all of them, cold fruit, a croissant with French jam. Over where the falcons train, the heads and feet of the dead chicks they couldn't swallow are shallowly buried in the sand, an offering for the foxes that will come by night. I want coffee in Finjan from Adalla. My feet tipped in henna. Why did I come to meet the desert with a bare face, without gifts? This is Dilmun. This is Eden. The falcons journey here for food, then are tracked, captured for a season, and released. Such is the call of paradise.
The voice of Majda Gama. This is The Poet and the Poem from the Library of Congress. The program is produced by Forest Woods Media Productions, post-production by Mike Turpin, MET Studios. We wish to thank the Library of Congress for making the program possible. Funding is provided by the Sinipet Fund, the Rivada Foundation, Natalie Canavore, the Anne Arundel Arts Council, and Sandy Jackson Cohen. Mike Turpin's our engineer, and I'm Grace Cavalieri.